What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Hurricane Hotline on FM 104.3 WQAM. An in-depth look at the Miami Hurricanes, presented by Williamson Cadillac.
Williamson Cadillac. Experience the South Florida lifestyle in a new Cadillac from Miami's luxury dealership, Williamson Cadillac. Williamson is Miami.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. What an exciting time this is. National Championship Week. Can you believe it? Pinch me. Pinch me again. Pinch me a third time. Trevor Harris is trying to reach through the screen to pinch me. Joe Zagacki, Trevor Harris. For the next hour, we're going to replay and relive the Fiesta Bowl. We'll hear from Mario Cristobal. We'll hear from Kurt Cignetti. And Eric Palms is going to join us from the Orange Bowl committee as well to talk about how South Florida ended up with the championship game and the impact the championship game is having on South Florida and the Orange Bowl committee being involved. So Eric will join us at about 6:45 or so. We're going to relive, what's today, Wednesday? So the game was last Thursday. I don't even know what day it is or what time zone I've been in. Over the last couple of weeks, let me see. I've been to Virginia Tech, Pittsburgh, Beaver Creek, College Station, Dallas, Glendale, Arizona, South Bend, Indiana, and still to come, Clemson, South Carolina. It is wild. It has been a great month. Is it a month? Let me see. What's today's date?
The 14th.
Oh, today's the 14th. Yeah, the 12th is my daughter's been married for a month. How about that? At any rate, on Monday night, we've got the National Championship game. Our coverage begins at 3 o'clock. Kickoff is at 7:50 p.m. They've just announced the president's going to be there. That'll make it even more wild. Everybody knows what the ticket prices are, what the parking situation is. Just get there early. That's what I'm going to do. I don't even have a parking spot. Well, now I do, but I mean, I didn't before. Thank you, Claudia. Claudia took care of me, but I'm hiking it in. So it is what it is for the championship game. We're not even in our same booth. That makes no sense to me. I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, all the booths in the stadium for radio are, shall we say, challenging. So it doesn't really matter if we're on the, you know, we're going to be, I don't know, 50 steps to our left. But like, wouldn't it be easier just to say, here, you've been in that booth all year, the wiring, the technical stuff, just keep it? No, we got to move down the hallway. Actually, probably a better spot. I don't know. At any rate, it doesn't matter. It's all good. The national championship game is here. Miami's got a chance to win it all. They're a heavy underdog. We can dive into that, and we're going to dive into that during the pregame show. It's as if Miami hasn't played anybody in the playoffs. It's as if they haven't faced a great Texas A&M offensive line or a great Texas A&M defensive line. It's as if Ohio State didn't have a good team. It's as if Ole Miss didn't have good wide receivers. It's just all Indiana. Okay, that's fine. We'll see what happens. At any rate, a week ago, it was wild at the Fiesta Bowl, and this, my dear friends, is how it all sounded from start to finish.
Isaiah Hartrup will stand back deep on the right hash mark for Ole Miss. The game is going to keep us guessing right to the end. Carter Davis has the ball teed up on the near side left hash mark. Ole Miss will come out of the north end zone. As we face the field, they will go left to right. They're in blue and white. Miami's all in white. The winner goes to the national championship game. Everybody is on their feet. The moment everybody is waiting for.
No better time to set a tempo than kickoff coverage.
The Final Four winner of the championship. It's going to be an action-packed game. Here comes Carter Davis. Away we go. from Glendale, Arizona. Fourth and two from the 43 of Ole Miss. Fletcher in the backfield, fourth and two. Beck waiting right hash mark. Turns, gives Fletcher up the middle. I don't think he got
there.
That's
it. Oh,
he's still going. He's still going. He got the push, and he got the first down. He needed two, and he got 3 hard yards. Mark Fletcher.
3 hard yards, and they hurt a Ole Miss Rebel as well.
So now here comes Carter Davis trying to put Miami in front.
Watch the push.
Davis with a snap down, kick on the way. Got plenty behind it, and Carter Davis puts Miami in front. Beck brings him up from the 4-yard line. Brown top of the eye. Beck turns, gives to Brown, comes right side. Brown lowers the shoulder.
Baby.
Brown dives. He's into the end zone for a Miami touchdown. And the Hurricanes reclaim the lead. Marty Brown caps it off. 7:09 to go in the quarter. Miami 9-7 now over Ole Miss on a 15-play, 75-yard drive that took almost 8 minutes. Ball to Miami 48, back to the air. Stands tall, drifts right, scans the field, looks, throws. Deep down the field, he's got a man out there, and it's caught for a touchdown. It's Marion, 52 yards for the Miami touchdown. What a throw by Carson Beck. Put it right on the money, bought himself some time, scanned the field, and a glorious pass from Beck to Marion, and Miami's got 6 more points.
Patience is a virtue, and Carson Beck has patience. He let the play develop. He let the routes run clean and delivers 6 points for your Miami Hurricane.
53-yard field goal. He's now 10 for 11 on 50-plus. He was wide right in this direction earlier tonight. This one on the way. Oh, it hit the upright. No good.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Blanked it off the upright. No good. I told you he missed earlier tonight in pregames, kicking toward this end zone, the south end zone, and it hit the upright, and Miami holds on defensively. Miami sends a blitz. Chandler steps up. He gets away from one. Down he goes. Blunt got him. Blunt got him around the waist.
Armando.
No gain on the play. Fourth down and 10. They'll send the field goal kicker on.
Armando Blunt makes the athletic play. He single-handedly brings Chambliss down to the dirt.
Second down and 11. Ball of the Ole Miss 36. Off the right hash mark. Miami moving left to right. Beck takes. Fires over to Tony for a bubble screen. Tony starts for the 30.
Come on, baby.
Tony to the 25.
Come
here
on,
we
baby.
Go.
Come on, baby.
He's at the 10.
Come on, baby.
He's at the 5. He's in to the end zone. Touchdown, Malachi Tony. 36 with taking yards. Puts Miami in front with 5:04 to go in the game. Miami 23, Ole Miss 19. 36 magical Malachi Tony yards for the Miami lead with 5:04 to go.
Hottie Toddy, you can't stop nobody.
What can Shannon Dawson draw up here? Beck in the shotgun. Looks over the defense. Bauman in motion. Here's the snap. They rush four. Beck looks. He fires. It's caught at the 20-yard line. Out of the 18-yard line.
Baby.
It's Keelan Marion
first
with
down.
A first down with 55 seconds to go in the game. Marty Brown to the right shoulder of Beck. 3 receivers left. Beck holds his hands out, takes, drops, looks, wants to throw.
Run it,
baby,
you got it, you got it.
Carson Beck into the end zone. He runs it in over the left side. Carson Beck takes it in for a Miami touchdown. Miami touchdown for Carson Beck. Is that the winning moment? It's a 3-yard touchdown for Carson Beck. And Miami has a 30-27 lead. With 18 seconds to go in the game.
Potty, Toddy, the Hurricanes gonna potty. How about that, Miami fans?
Poizer and Thomas are back deep on the goal line. Mesidor and Bain are lined up on the same side. And here we go. Perhaps the final play of this final four. 6 seconds from going to the national championship. Snap. Chambliss drifts to his left. He lets it fly deep in the end zone. It is knocked away. Incomplete. No time left. No time left. Miami wins. Miami wins. Miami's going to the national championship, Don. We're going to the national championship.
Pack your bags.
Is it officially over in the desert this time? 23 years later, there are no flags, and Miami has won. Miami's going to the national championship. Carson Beck is your Hurricanes hero. Miami wins 31-27, and the Hurricanes will play for the national championship.
Mario Cristobal has kept his promise. He came home to take his Hurricanes to the national championship game, and he did it in 4 years. Promise delivered.
Keelan Marion, man, on that last drive, what was working for you guys?
Man, we looked at the clock and said, man, we got 3 minutes left of our life. Everything on the line, man. We got 3 minutes. You can give us 3 minutes of everything you got, and that's what we did. We stayed together as a team. We stayed even keel. Didn't get too high. Didn't get too low. We stayed even keel. And you see what we did.
You're in for a national championship at Hard Rock Stadium.
Man, crazy, man. I never thought I'd be in a national championship. We've been working. I ain't gonna say I. We've been working so hard. People don't know. Everybody counted us out. Everybody doubted us, man. We here. The U is back.
How about the toughness, the resilience, the never fold?
Man, we ain't never folding. We done been down before. They go up on us. We told each other on the sideline, we good. We get a turnover, we good. Defense, anytime we do something wrong, defense gonna tell us they got our back. Defense, they get a touchdown, offense tell them we got our back. You stick together as a team and you see what happens.
What about that guy right there, Carson Beck, carrying it into the mat?
Everybody spoke down on that kid. Everybody spoke bad on him, saying he was this and that, and he proved everybody wrong. He never came to the media and said nothing. He been proving everybody wrong, game by game. You can say what you want about him. We know who he is.
All right, Keelan, congratulations. Hey, we'll see you at Hard Rock.
Thank you, baby.
I got Carson Beck.
Oh, we got to go to Carson Beck.
We got Carson Beck. Your whole trophy, but more importantly, you ran it in and took the Canes home, Miami.
What an unbelievable game. This team never flinched. You know, in the face of adversity, we never gave up. And again, I always say this, it takes all 11 on the field. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to do any of that without every single one of my teammates just laying everything on the line for me, this team, and for the U. So, again, I'm so thankful for these guys and the way that we were able to handle adversity and fight through.
You were asked this week about your draft status and what you think you did, and your answer was beautiful. You said there was only one thing that matters, winning, and you won again today.
Again, that's the most important thing in the game, right? Whether I hand the ball off 70 times or throw it 70 times, all that matters is that we have more points than the other team at the end of the day, and this team was able to do that tonight, and man, I'm just so proud of these guys.
You had a nice embrace. I mean, you're close with everybody here. You were here with Fletch, you played through today, your offensive finishing, and then coming through in basically a two-minute drive.
So much talent. I mean, so much talent, and the connection is real. This team is really a family, and if it wasn't, you know, moments like that don't happen, you know, and again, we live for those moments. That's why you play the game. That's why you play at the U, baby. I mean, you get in these big-time games, and shoot, we just got to execute and finish like we did.
I know we want to end with more, but the fact that you're going to have a chance to go play for the Ultimate, how special is that?
It's in Hard Rock, baby. I think that's all that needs to be said.
All right, Carson. I think last week we said one more to work. We'll get another one, and we got a date after the game. I ain't talking to you before the game. We're talking after.
Let's do it, baby.
All right, go ahead, Josh.
He's smiling ear to ear, man. How does this feel?
It's a bittersweet feeling. Knowing how the game ended, you ain't the most excited, but yeah, we won.
You're going home to play for a national championship, my man.
Yes, sir. We're going home. We're going home to play for the big bucks. Yes, sir.
I know it got a little dicey there, but you guys held it. You guys held your own.
We did. That's resiliency in the team, man. That's what we do. We're going to keep fighting to the first whistle to the last. We had some bumps and bruises, but that's football. They get coached, too. So we came out and played our brand, which is all the way to the whistle. Next thing you know, we're going back home, baby.
How about Carson Beck leading the way, running it in for the go-ahead score?
Carson know what Carson do. That's something he do every week in practice. Now he's just leading us under the big lights. I mean, if you watch him on Green Tree and Cobb, you'll understand why this happened here in Arizona.
You said you came here, you stayed home for your community, your city, your town. Now you get to do it for your city and your town.
Yeah, I do, man. I get to bring it back home, man. It's the best feeling. We got practice tomorrow.
Congratulations.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Bain.
Thanks.
Well, that's the way it all sounded a week ago in Glendale, Arizona. It was some white knuckle tension there. Let me tell you, that was a lot of fun, a lot of stress, and a lot of exuberance. And we do it all over again on Monday night as the Canes take on Indiana. And the roadmap to winning for Miami, keep doing what they're doing, man, except the penalties. Get rid of the penalties. Lean on that offensive line. They've got the size advantage over Indiana. Indiana is relying on their defensive line, which gets a lot of penetration. But depending on how they line up, Mikhail Kamara, who's a great player for them, is 6'1", 262 pounds. If he lines up against Markell Bell, Markell Bell, 6'8", 340. You tell me. On the other side, Stephen Daly, 6'1", 273. Francis Malinoa, 6'6", 315. Okay? They can go with Ndukwe if they'd like. He's 6'3", 244. Malinoa is still 315. Inside, they have Hosea Wheeler, 298, 6'3", 298. Inez is 340. Mario Landino, 6'4", 284. Brockermeyer is 2'8", 295. Tyreek Tucker makes a lot of plays. 302 pounds, 6 feet, 302. Matt McCoy, 6'6", 325. Okay, how about Okunlola, 6'6", 330. To me, the roadmap to winning, lean on that offensive line. Let them continue to do what they've done. Mark Fletcher has been the MVP of the offense. They all keep talking about Carson Beck, and Beck's been fine. He's leading the wins, but Fletcher's been the MVP. And then you got to limit the explosive plays. Mendoza hunts explosive plays. His receivers, especially Surratt, makes a lot of plays in the air. Turnovers, Miami's 9-0 when they win the turnover battle. Hell, they're 2-0 when the turnovers are even. That's 11 wins right there. Don't lose the turnover battle. 2-2 this season when they've lost a turnover battle. You know where you never lose any battles? Williamson Cadillac. Williamson Automotive, Miami's luxury dealership, founded over 50 years ago. Williamson Cadillac has built a loyal client base by staying focused on the customer experience. They never turn it over there. Customers are treated like royalty, like family. You want to enjoy world-class customer service and purchase a new Cadillac at the same time? Williamson Cadillac is the place you need to go. They've got them all. The XT5, the XT6, the all-new electric Lyric, you name it, they've got it. Ed Williamson, lovely wife Carol, I saw him the other day at the basketball game. They're revved up, ready to go for this national championship game. They're excited. They're excited about University of Miami basketball. That's won 10 games in a row. But you should be excited. If you're in the market for a new Cadillac, and you want great customer experience, and you want to be treated like family, you want to be treated like royalty, let's face it, we all want to be treated like family, right? You want to be treated like you're on the team, like you're part of the team. And when you go to Williamson, nobody does it better. A lot of people could take a lesson from Ed Williamson and his crew on how to treat people. They know how to do it. You want to feel like you're on the Williamson team? Check it out. Go online first, WilliamsonAutomotiveGroup.com. Then head on down to Williamson. Easy to find. US 1, 104th Street, just south of the Palmetto. Williamson Cadillac. Williamson is Miami.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
Time for more Hurricane Hotline on FM 104.3 WQAM. Presented by Williamson Cadillac. Williamson is Miami.
All right, welcome back to the show. Miami and Indiana National Championship on Monday night. We'll have it for you beginning at 3, kickoff about 7:50 p.m. So we'll have a nice long pregame for you. And so let's turn our attention to the Canes and the Hoosiers. Up first, University of Miami head coach Mario Cristobal.
The routine doesn't change at all. You know, quite it's almost identical because you do have to check into a hotel, you know, a specific hotel on a specific date. The only thing that changes is that classes have started, you know, and we have, I believe, 28 new members, 28 of the 29, 29 of the 30 new members of our team here practicing with us, which is great for us. You know, as the year goes on, we've lost some guys to injury, and they've been able to get a glimpse of what preparation is like. But aside from that and preparing for a game, nothing changes.
Two things, if I may. One, can you sort of just update us on broadly where you guys are from an injury standpoint? And two, kind of along the lines of Will's question, how do you ensure that your team doesn't have an exhale? Like, okay, you're in the final, you're back at Hard Rock. Mm-hmm. How do you keep that edge?
Well, from an injury standpoint, I believe we're coming out a lot like we went into last game. I know a couple guys skimped out of the game. Mesdor's in great condition. He hurt his elbow for a second, and he's already full throttle. Ahmad Moten was full throttle today. What was the other one? I know OJ came out. Lofton would be the one that's in question. That would be the one that was in question. But aside from that, I actually feel really good about the rest.
Mario, Adam with the Scene Sun Center. Just to follow up on that, I think you guys even mentioned OJ and potentially Damari Brown. I know he's been working his way back throughout the playoffs.
Sure. I would say OJ is good to go, and Damari Brown will still be day by day.
Seems like Mark Fletcher's playing his best football since he's been here. Just what have you seen click for him or really work for him over the last, you know, month or so since the playoffs started?
Well, I think a couple things. A good question. I think the fact that he's healthy, right? I think development. You know, I think everybody wants to see a freshman knock it out the park right away, and it's not always the way it's supposed to be or the way it ends up happening. Like a guy that has been in a system in his third year that has seen similar schemes, that has run behind certain guys, that has seen certain calls against certain fronts, certain pressures, a guy that has protected against every blitz known to man, like day after day, year after year, like there's nothing more valuable than the mother of all teaching and learning. That's the repetition. And Mark Fletcher has had hundreds and thousands of repetitions. And when you do that, and when you've been through what he's been through, it just means that much more, you know? And it shows in the way he approaches everything that he does. So I think the combination of all those things is what's showing up.
Coach, you faced Fernando last year at Cal, and I'm curious just what you remember about his performance in that game and what you would say about maybe his growth since that time to what he's doing
now.
Well,
you saw all the things that you see now, except the supporting cast right now is very different. Certainly the system is completely different, but you're looking at a massive, physical, tough offensive line that is on point. They don't make mistakes. Their IDs are exactly what they need to be when they need to be that way. Their receivers are big-time playmakers, and they do it with, you know, back shoulder, underthrown fades. They do it by running by you, underneath, finding soft spots in zone coverage, and complemented by a very physical downhill run game, and one that could circle you as well. So a guy like that in that system with that level of coaching where, I mean, he's been coached to continue to progress at such a high level. It's you see the player, you saw the talent last year. The supporting cast wasn't there yet, and they were a really good team, we thought. But this year, obviously, it's a whole different level with where he's at.
Three more. Will, Chris, and then we'll go with Tim.
Mark, all season long, whether it be through the media or to your players, that 1-0 mentality has just been your theme. Mm-hmm. When the 1-0 now means a national championship, what does that message mean to you? How does that resonate with the players? Like, how does it change this week, the 1-0 mentality?
Yes, sir. Well, you know, Will, I don't think you make the game any heavier than what it is. I think it's really important that 1-0, earning 1-0 and earning the opportunity to cut it loose on game day, it's still a process, right? And it started last January, and it carries over all the way through the course of the week. And you don't stray from that. The only thing you change of that is you just make it better and better each and every week. Like, you really dig deep as a coach. Hey, how can I make this process better? But you don't go about based on a theme and a philosophy that has brought you, you know, to this point, and, you know, to come this far, you don't stray from it to go farther. So we stay along the lines of what we've been doing.
Christopher Sock, inside you spoke about Fernando obviously a lot just now, but their offensive guys Indiana on defense, just your impressions of them, what you've seen from them defensively?
They're the best overall team and best defense we have faced. I know that their rankings and anything statistically important are between 1 and 5. And it starts with this. They're really fast, physical, explosive, talented, and smart. They play with a lot of physicality, a lot of violence. They understand their scheme top to bottom. They make it very challenging, and I'll tell you why. They're multiple up front, and they're multiple on the back end. And so the way that they understand what you're doing so well, they set up and line up in a manner where they challenge your IDs. You know, they've done a great job confusing opponent offensive lines with how they line up and how they bluff and disguise what they're doing, not only in the front seven, but on the back end. That's a challenge with them. And you got to understand, these guys, they played a lot of games together. A lot of these guys came over from JMU. They went deep into the playoffs, right, a year ago. They've been in this system and have played a lot of ball together. And therefore, that's why you see the instantaneous reactions, right? The physicality and the way that they, the closing speed that they have on a down after down basis. And on top of all that, and I think it's really worth pointing out from a technique and fundamental standpoint, that's what really stands out to me. Because they play with their feet in the ground with great pad level and with elite use of their hands. They understand how to leverage the ball and what to do when they get there. And they, from a turnover margin standpoint, they're number one in the country. And they play great complementary football. You witnessed some of it, you know, in their last game. But if you look throughout the course of the season, from the first series at Iowa to this last weekend with the pick six and the forced fumble and whatnot, they do a great job playing complementary football.
Hurricanes have to be ready from the very first snap. Indiana's had this uncanny ability early in the game, like the first series, of getting interceptions. They had an interception against UCLA. They had an interception against Purdue, a pick six against Oregon, and an interception against Ohio State. And I think there's one more game. So at least 5 games, the first series, they've had an interception. And that certainly gets them the jump start they're looking for. At any rate, Kurt Cignetti, right now, he's the guy. He's the guy in college football. Everybody's looking at him, looking at his magic. Here's what he had to say about this upcoming national championship game.
If you look at, you know, the record since Indiana started playing football and relative to the success we've had the last 2 years, we've broken a lot of records here in terms of wins, championships, postseason games, top 10 wins on the road, et cetera, top 10 wins, period. And so, you know, it's been kind of surreal, but, you know, you get it done with the right people properly led, and you got to have a blueprint plan and process. You got to have the right people on your staff and the right people in the locker room. And we've been fortunate to have great staff continuity. You know, with Bryant and Mike have been with me 11, 12 years, and a lot of other guys on staff 5, 6, 7 years. And then down, you know, in the locker room, we got a lot of older guys that have high character, great leadership traits. They can buy into the team vision. They're very consistent day in, day out in terms of, you know, being committed and disciplined and working hard toward improvement, staying focused on the goal, keeping the eye on the bullseye, so to speak. And, you know, being able to sort of enter every Saturday prepared with the right mindset and then putting it on the field. So it's all about people. And then you got to have a blueprint and a plan. And I think, you know, there's no question about it. That's what's gotten us to this point.
I wanted to get your thoughts on your defense. 3 postseason wins, all 3 over top 10 teams, only 35 points allowed, only 28 outside of garbage time, 25 TFLs, 11 sacks. Just what do you think of the level of impact your defense is proving they can play at in the postseason specifically?
Well, you know, we were excellent against Ohio State, Alabama, against Oregon. You know, we created 3 turnovers and blocked a punt, which was 4, led to 21 points. And, you know, it starts with Bryant Haynes. He's the leader of the defense, and, you know, he goes in with a good plan and puts our guys in position to attack and make plays. But then the credit goes to the guys on the field. You know, leader of the defense is Aiden Fisher, but every unit has its leaders, and it all starts up front with, you know, stopping a run and affecting the quarterback. And You know, turnover ratio is huge, getting the takeaways and then limiting the explosive plays in good and critical situations. And, you know, we're playing a little shorthanded. You know, we've lost some guys that were valuable contributors. You know, it's been the next man up mentality, like Daniel Ndukwe, who made a couple big plays in that game, blocked a punt also. You know, we haven't skipped a beat, so to speak. Now, there were a few more cleanup plays coming out of the Oregon game than the other games, partly because of the conflict Oregon can put you in offensively with tight ends that run like receivers and spread you out and create some throwing lanes. But, you know, you got to be great. You got to be really consistent in all three phases to be successful. And I think that's what this team has been. We've been pretty consistent on offense, defense, and special teams. And for the most part, you know, we've played at a high level from play one to 150, regardless of the competitive circumstances.
Yeah, Kurt, I know your offense has evolved and personnel has obviously changed, but does facing Corey Heathermead add kind of any wrinkles to game planning, given his familiarity with your scheme and Mike Shanahan? And I know you mentioned that he is a bit different scheme-wise than Bryant Haynes is. What's unique about his kind of approach versus Bryant?
Well, I think we've evolved offensively since he was my defensive coordinator first 3 years at JMU. We've evolved offensively. Terminology's changed. We do things differently. But his scheme has too. Now, philosophically, in terms of what we think is important, him and I, that hadn't changed. He's going to create havoc up front, stop the run, TFLs, sacks. They got 47 sacks on the year. And he's going to attack. The way he goes about it is a little different than the way he went about it at JMU. But, you know, the way we go about it offensively is a little different, too. So, I got a lot of respect for Corey. He did a tremendous job. When I hated to see him go. I hold him in very high regard. He's one of the best football coaches I've ever been around. His day in, day out intensity and his commitment to the game is unparalleled. But I was fortunate to have Bryant Haynes on my staff, who was ready to step into that role. And, they're a little different cause they're different people. And, Bryant likes to do a lot of different things but we do them well. But the philosophy is still the same in terms of it all starts up front. And, statistically, since Bryant's taken over, it's about like it was when Corey was a coordinator. You know, we're always in the top five in total defense, one or two against the run, very high in TFLs and sacks. And in terms of the schematics, man zone, the kind of blitzes, the fronts, we've changed a little bit, and I've seen Corey change based on what I'm seeing on tape.
Fernando Mendoza, he talks to us in the media like a coach, like he sounds like a coach. I'm curious, what is his communication like within the team and within the program and when you're working with him?
Well, Chandler Whitmer and Derek Owens, our strength and conditioning coach, have more day in, day out involvement with Fernando than I do. And I can tell you this, that the best way to lead a team is to perform well. Especially at the quarterback position. I've never tried to like make that guy the leader in spring ball because his performance will speak for itself. And he is highly, highly respected in the locker room. The way he's played speaks for itself. I mean, I thought he was excellent against Oregon. And he's just, even since the Heisman Trophy, he's upped his level of play. And, he's a special guy. I mean, he's extremely intelligent and people recognize that. And, he says the right things and he'll be really successful one day when football ends, whatever it is he chooses to do. And he's got a great relationship with the guys and it's mainly the older guys, obviously. Those guys hang together. And, but I think what he's done behind the scenes to bring the offensive unit even closer together. And that's a lot. Those are a lot of things that I'm not aware of at the time, find out later. You know, he's just done a tremendous job in every single area where you could impact team success. He's been front and center.
Mendoza, what a season. Heisman winner for a reason. 41 touchdowns, 6 interceptions in the 2 playoff games against Oregon and Alabama. He has 5 incompletions. 5 incompletions in 2 games. So we'll see where that stands after the first quarter. When we come back, Eric Palms, the CEO of the Orange Bowl Committee, will join us. We'll talk about the impact of the national championship game in Miami as we continue here on the show right after this.
Hurricane Hotline continues on FM 104.3 WQAM. Presented by Williamson Cadillac. Williamson is Miami.
Welcome back to the show. On Monday, we have the national championship game right here on QAM 104.3 WQAM. And we are looking forward to that. Our pregame gets underway at 3 o'clock, kickoff at about 7:50. Trevor will be one of our producers, Don Bailey Jr. Josh Darrow will be with me right now. The chief executive officer of the Orange Bowl Committee is with us, our good friend Eric Palms. Eric, good evening. How are you?
Joe Z, good evening. Great talking with you.
Well, we have a lot of things to discuss, but I'll just start here. Can you believe it's Miami in the national championship game? Of all the games that could come together, we've got Miami in the national championship game.
You know, I'm not a coach, but I watch a lot of football. And going into the season, I mean, they were definitely one of those programs that, you know, you could see the ingredients that, hey, this team has a real shot to make a run. And there's a lot of teams that way. There's a good, you know, 10, 12 that you see and you go, like, they're built for this. And so it's not easy. You know, I've done this for 32 years. It used to be in the old system, just 2 teams would emerge. And then 11 years ago, they began the college football playoff with a 4-team model. And it's just hard. You know, so many teams that have great players, have great coaches. And they invest in their program. And so it's been remarkable to see what Mario's done in such a short time. And I think it's going to be an electric atmosphere on Monday night with both Indiana, Miami, and 2 well-deserving teams playing.
Okay, well, a tip of the hat to you for helping to get this championship game here. The Orange Bowl played a role in it. So did Dolphin Stadium. So did the Dolphins. So did Hard Rock Stadium. So did local government partners. So a tip of the hat to all of them, but especially you. Yeah. Tell us how it all came together and how fortunate we are, because this is going to have a major impact on the community, considering all the bids from around the country.
Yeah, well, it's a team effort all the way. Just to give it a little bit of a chronology, you know, the Orange Bowl was started in 1935, and the mission of the Orange Bowl Committee was to bring economic development to the area. Back then, it was a sleepy town and was coming off a hurricane in 1926. And so this idea came, hey, look what's happening in Pasadena, California. And long story short, they started this game, and it's the second oldest bowl game in the country. And we've had a great history, and includes some of the great moments in the University of Miami's football program's history. But as mentioned earlier, in 2015, the college football playoff was born, and there was a distinction. And they moved, you know, the semifinal rounds into the bowls, but they pulled the national championship game and bid it out, much like you see Super Bowl, like you see a World Cup. And so in this marketplace, you know, you've got the Miami Dolphins, Steve Ross and Tom Garfinkel have done with that venue. You know, that's a key ingredient to all this. So we got together with them. We turned to government, turned to tourism leaders in all 3 counties and said, hey, the Orange Bowl obviously knows who's going to make these decisions. It's the commissioners that lead college football. So we'll lead the bid effort. The Orange Bowl will form a host committee, you know, comprised of business and community leaders. And it's a regional play. And so we went at it. And if you remember, back in 2017. We won the first bid for the 21 game. And, you know, we were so excited and being in New Orleans in January 2020 when Joe Burrow was leading the LSU Tigers for the championship. We came back, Super Bowl was down here, and literally a month later, you know, we started learning about COVID. And in that year, we didn't know if the season was going to be played, and if it was, were they going to get through it, and would they get through postseason? And we did. You know, the 2021 game was played at Hard Rock Stadium in front of 13,000 fans. And we saw all the college football playoff leadership there. We had Mayor Lee Biancava. We had Mayor Harris from the city of Miami Gardens. We had Oliver Gilbert. I remember like yesterday, and we said one thing, please come back. Please let us have the full thing. And to the CFP's credit, a year later, they came to us and said, here's the 26th game. If you guys want to make a run at it, we'll go through a bid process. And we were awarded it in November of 2020. I'm sorry, August of 2022. And we've been at it ever since, Joe. I mean, these things are hard. You know, communities across the country want to have great events. I always say great communities have great events. And the Super Bowl and the College Football Playoff National Championship game and World Cup, all these events are coveted. So we're just so excited. It's been a four-year odyssey. We have a great host committee led by Jack Seiler, former mayor of Fort Lauderdale, a great Orange Bowl member. We have so many. We have 66 members of our board. These are amazing people that have not just given financially to the cause, but given their time and their energy. So we're just so excited.
What do you think this financially, on the heels of the Orange Bowl, you know, 2 weeks ago, yeah, or whatever it was, and now we got the championship game. And I want to get into some of the other stuff that you've done for the community, but what do you think the impact is going to be on our community?
It's going to be tremendous. I mean, this is, you know, I look at this matchup, I see the ingredients of everything you could dream of in front of you. First of all, Indiana, you know, this last 2 year run is just remarkable. And if you watch the Rose Bowl game and you watch the Peach Bowl and you look at the crowd, I mean, the whole building was Indiana Hoosiers. And I think it's captured the imagination of the country because they're good. And then when you have the quarterback that comes from Miami, Columbus High School, first Heisman Trophy winner ever to grow up in Miami, you know, that's one side of the equation, and you're going to see the tourism come with that. With that being said, being in this marketplace, growing up in this marketplace, knowing what the University of Miami means to not just the alums and the students and everybody that's part of the University of Miami's world, but what it means to the community, you know, of South Florida, to have them come back for the first time in 24 years is just, it's palpable. You can feel it. So between the tourism, I would imagine the TV audience is going to be off the charts. Anytime the U's on, it brings eyeballs. Anytime a Big Ten program's on, it brings eyeballs. So it's amazing, and I would expect it to be in that $300-plus million range when it's all measured out and we do a study on that. And the unspoken element of this that doesn't get as much play is the community give back through the CFP Foundation, through Extra Yard for Teachers, their program, through the Orange Bowl Cares program. I would say between the Orange Bowl game and the national championship game, about $10 million is going back into the community. And as we say, when the lights are down and everybody leaves, that's what really matters of what happens in our community. So all these things are happening, and it impacts our community in so many ways.
Well, you just cut the ribbon on a $2.7 million renovation of Orange Bowl Field at Walt Frazier Park. Now, Walt Frazier, of course, a great mentor to my broadcast partner, Don Bailey, so I know he's thrilled that there's a Walt Frazier Park. But you fix that up, and man alive, by the way, you drive around Dade and Broward County, and sometimes I'll be driving and my head snaps around because I see these parks where you guys have gone in and created just beautiful, beautiful facilities.
Well, between the Orange Bowl Committee and the 2026 Miami Host Committee working together through this window, I would just tell you that, you know, there's different ways to give community outreach programming in your respective communities. But what the philosophy here is, we don't just want to write a check. We want to see a multiplier effect. So when we do our programs, that they live. And so you're seeing right now, you know, yesterday was the highlight for me, candidly. I mean, growing up down here, I'm watching the football, you know, that takes place, you know, at the high school level. And to know who Walt Frazier was and is today, you know, we went to that park, I don't know, about a year and a half ago. Commissioner Gilbert was kind of the driver on it. And we saw what it was. It was a traditional field. It wasn't in the worst condition. It wasn't in the best condition. But we're like, we knew that with this investment, a partnership between Miami-Dade County and the Orange Bowl Committee and the 2026 Miami Host Committee, that $2.3 million later is just a spectacular field. And to your point, that's number seven that we have done. We have another one next year coming at the Kendall Boys and Girls Club in South Miami. And what we see, whether it's Belgate, Florida, whether it's in Fort Lauderdale at Carter Park, what you see is it's not just the kids that use this. It's on all levels. You know, it's, you know, college players come back, professional players use this field to train because it's such a beautiful field. And then you see the adults in the neighborhoods coming out there and exercising, and it's just gratifying and just a great celebration. And then to bridge that to, you know, what the CFP Foundation does with their Extra Yard for Teachers program, we're going into 30 elementary and middle schools, going to libraries and renovating them into innovative learning spaces. And we're putting in technology. We're beautifying the room. We're putting modular furniture where it's not traditionally when you and I went to school and sitting in a wooden chair looking at our teacher. No, this stuff is modular and it moves around, and they have technology and smart boards and virtual reality goggles and everything you can think of. And you're going like, wow, you know, 30 middle schools and elementary schools are being transformed, and it's all because of the 2026 CFP National Championship game and the CFP quarterfinal with the Capital One Orange Bowl. So people should know, when you support these games and you come out, there is a return, because nobody owns the Orange Bowl. Nobody does. It's the community that owns it, and we're just stewards of that.
Before we let you go, and Monday is going to be a very exciting time for everybody. I know you're going to be really, really proud on Monday when you see both teams come out on the field. Maybe have a little wink in your eye when Miami comes out. There's been, you know, a lot of discussion about expanding the playoff and the bowls. And so we've gone through this for the first time. You know my fondness for the Orange Bowl. It's always had a spot in my heart. So I'm on Team Orange Bowl. And so there's this discussion about, you know, more games on campus. Now we've gone through for the first time. I've had a chance to experience. We went to the Cotton Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl. I wish we had gone to the Orange Bowl, which would have made more sense. But that being said, I get, you know, the attraction of playing on campus, but man alive, Eric, it's such a great experience for these kids to play in these stadiums. And the bowls still do a great job. It's limited time, but the bowls still roll out the red carpet and give these kids, while the stakes are really high for everybody now, I mean, really high, and the tension's really high. What you guys do with the Orange Bowl, with the other bowls, do can't go unnoticed.
Yeah. Well, you know, listen, I would answer it this way. First of all, I've been here since 1993. When I got here, it was the Bowl Coalition, and that was a three-year window that graduated to the Bowl Alliance, that graduated to the four-year terms of the Bowl Championship Series, and now we're in year 12 of the original 12-year agreement of the College Football Playoff. And what, you know, all of us at the Orange Bowl Committee, you know, I work for 415 community leaders that, in their businesses, you have to embrace change. And that's what's happened in this modern era. To your point, you know, we're very proud, you know, of 92 years. I know the Tournament of Roses Association, what they do with the Rose Bowl game, it's over 100 years old. The All-State Sugar Bowl, Cotton Bowl, it goes on and on. You know, these brands are hard to build overnight. They're American traditions. When you go on a campus, as you know, you've been so many games. If I walk around like I did in Oregon a few weeks ago with an orange jacket, they know it's not me. They know it's Orange Bowl. They know it's Miami and South Florida. And so we want to protect that. With that being said, the commissioners and Notre Dame's athletic director that formed the College Football Playoff Management Committee, you know, I think they struck a really good balance. They've created a playoff. It has, you know, the first round on campus, the quarterfinals and semifinals are in bowl games, and ultimately a championship game at a neutral site that they bid out. And I would say that the difference is when the University of Miami goes to, you know, College Station and plays Texas A&M, you know, it's not a neutral game. It's a home game for that school. And when you get to this level of a playoff, when these teams are so equally matched, it sometimes lends itself better to A, organizations that are working all year on this, and they build a fair competitive balance to the equation, and that everything's seamless when you go through this multi-round playoff, right? It's a four-round playoff, has 11 games with 12 teams and so forth. It also is a focus to say, hey, the stadium should be balanced. So what you saw in the Cotton Bowl, what you saw in the Fiesta Bowl, when you have that dynamic there and you see the commissioners looking at the respective institutions saying, when you get to that level at the college football platform, it makes more sense to do that. We advocate for that. We understand these are big decisions. We respect it. I think next week, this weekend, when the CFP Management Committee meets, they're going to talk about these things. And, you know, we're hoping that it comes forward that, you know, our focus is Miami and South Florida to protect the oldest institution, the oldest tradition here, and to make sure it thrives as we approach 100 years.
All right, Eric, always a pleasure. Best of luck. I guess all this is going to start here, like on Friday. So Monday's going to be wild. And congratulations, and thrilled that you guys were able to work with all the other powers to bring the game here. It's a big deal for us here in South Florida, so it should be a great night.
Well, let me just end it by saying I've been here through those years, and I've gotten to know you and Don Bailey exceptionally well. You guys are great friends, and when the clocks went to zero, you were the first two people I thought of. Seriously, and love you guys, and I look forward to seeing you on Monday night, and congratulations to you. I know you're a big part of the University of Miami family, so we'll see you then.
All right, Eric, thank you. That's Eric Palms joining us, Orange Bowl Committee Chief Executive Officer. Great to have him on the show. Had a great highlight reel. We heard from Coach Cristobal and Cignetti, so lots of good stuff coming up on Saturday. Hurricanes basketball, 2:15 tip-off here on 104.3 as Miami takes on Clemson, two undefeated teams inside the ACC. And then Monday, 3:00 in the afternoon, we get started with countdown to kickoff of the national championship game, Miami and Indiana. For Trevor Harris, I'm Joe Z. Have a great night, everyone.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.